Good morning.
Good morning, Elias. I'm so glad to hear your voice again.
What shall we discuss?
Well, I think we'll start with my friend Sandra. She's been having some issues, and I said I would speak for her this morning first. And if you remember Sandra, she was with us a couple times. She suffered from some panic attacks just a couple of weeks ago, and her heart was racing, and it was on and off for a week, she said, and then she had flu for half a week, and then she had to go back onto some of antidepressants that she used to take, had some real psychological anxiety attacks there. Anyway, she was wondering just what causes this. You know, she's been studying this material too, and she knows she creates her reality. But she wants to know if maybe there could be some of her other focuses affecting her.
That is a factor, but let me express to you, this is a confusing factor for most individuals. For them, you interpret the tendency to think that influencing the situation, and that is what is causing you to experience in a particular manner, and that is not entirely correct. Other focuses, or the energy of other focuses, or the experiences of other focuses can be influencing in the capacity that they exacerbate a situation, or that they emphasize a situation. But it begins with the individual. The individual is experiencing in some capacity first, and then those other energies are being tapped into, in a manner of speaking, and therefore they emphasize the situation, but they're not causing it.
Okay.
It is what I would express to her is that it may be considerably helpful to her to, first of all, generate several times each day to pause momentarily and interpret a breathing exercise that will allow her to relax and calm herself. In this, when I express a breathing exercise, how you do that is to close your eyes, focus on your breathing, incorporate perhaps two or three slow, deep breaths, and when you are doing that, to breathe in a calming energy, breathe in slowly and visualize the calming, cool energy filling your body. And as you exhale, you breathe out slowly, and breathe out all tension. And then change the breathing into a pattern. Therefore, perhaps breathe two quick breaths, long breaths, 4 quick breaths, 2 long breaths. Create a pattern and repeat that for approximately 3 minutes. And in that, the reason that it is important to create a pattern is that that holds the attention on the breathing. It is very easy for your attention to drift when you are only focused upon breathing. And your attention can drift even within a time framework of 20 to 30 seconds. Therefore, if you are creating a pattern in breathing, it holds your attention on that action, and you're less likely to drift. Now, I would suggest that she expresses that action several times within her day, for this will help to remind her body consciousness to relax and not to be holding that tension. Also, I would also express the suggestion that in the morning, before she engages any activity, to engage a brief meditation. In this, not to force it and not to attempt to not think. For when individuals are not accustomed to generating a meditation consistently every day, it can be difficult or challenging to focus their attention. Therefore, what I would express is, first of all, in this meditation, eyes open. When you close your eyes and you are attempting to meditate, you give your brain more opportunity to engage thinking, and it is more difficult to actually relax. Therefore, eyes open, choose a focal point, meaning choosing some object that she can fix her attention on and look at. And it is not necessary to look at one specific point of that object, but to hold her vision on one particular object. And she can move her vision to different points in that object, but at one object. In this, to focus the rest of her attention on one of her other senses: hearing or touch are the most effective. Generally, hearing is more effective, but you can use your sense of touch also. In this, in using your sense of hearing to focus your hearing upon outside sounds, not sounds that are in your immediate surrounding or environment, such as in the room or in the house, but in some outside sounds, such as birds or traffic. It matters not. But to focus her hearing on some outside sound, And that is the entirety of the meditation. What that does is it focuses the body consciousness on senses, and in that it actually regulates your heart rate, your breathing, your nervous system, and it generates an even balanced calm with the entire body consciousness. It encourages the body consciousness to relax. And that sets a tone for the individual's energy for the entire day. In this, the meditation is not necessary to be any longer than 5 minutes. That is entirely adequate. If she chooses to focus her attention upon the sense of touch, it is a matter of paying attention to her skin and what her skin feels throughout her entire body, what the air feels on her skin, how her clothing feels on her skin, what is her skin experiencing in sensation, and the changes in that, or the different areas of her body consciousness, including temperature and different air qualities such as humidity or dryness, in that focusing entirely on that one sense of touch and what it feels. In this, I would express that what she is experiencing are reactions of the body in anxiety to associations, old associations that are somewhat being triggered by different factors now. In this, triggers can be expressed in many, many, many different capacities, some of which can be very subtle. It can be a scent, it can be a color, it can be a movement, a gesture, it can be an object, or it can be a time of day, or a time of week, or a time of month. Therefore, there are many, many, many different components that can be incorporated as triggers with associations, and they can be very subtle at times. But in that, the body consciousness is connecting with those triggers and is connecting with memories, even if she's not recalling those memories objectively. They are being tapped. They are being touched, and in that, it becomes uncomfortable, and the body produces this anxiety. And the more anxiety, even if you are not aware of feeling it initially, the more it builds. And in that, the body interprets a tendency to continue to hold that type of energy it is not being allowed to be expressed. And it generally is not allowed to be being expressed if the individual isn't noticing that they are expressing that tension. Therefore, the body continues to hold it, and it develops into greater and greater volume and creates anxiety. And when it creates anxiety to a certain degree, it creates a panic attack. Now, in this, the meditation and the periodic breathing exercise throughout the day will allow her to release some of that tension and therefore avoid it building into a panic attack. Eventually, it would be beneficial and advisable for her to be addressing to some of these associations that she has that are connected with past experiences that create this situation of anxiety. But this will address to the immediate situation and alleviate some of that energy to prevent those panic attacks.
Thank you. Boy, that was very comprehensive. Thank you. I think I'll use some of those methods to ease my tension throughout the day. Yeah. Thank you. I'll pass this along to Sandra, and maybe in the future she'll want to talk to you about her associations that trigger these tensions.
Oh.
Because you recommend that maybe she would want to face up to those in the future.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Okay. Well, I'll tell her because she wants to join with us in the future sometime again for another meeting. Thank you very much for that. I'm trying to decide which way I want to go here. I am still trying to get my Christ story together so that I can write it down and feel like I know how it came to be. You know, I've been very curious about this topic, well, from little up, actually. And I would like to discuss this second Jesus essence named Klaus. He evidently, a lot of the New Testament stories kind of revolve around his lifestyle, the way you have described him as being a carpenter, a fisherman, and so on and so forth. Now, he had a following who evidently accompanied him to the cross when he died. Is that correct?
Yes.
Did they then remove his body from his grave site?
Yes.
Yes, they did. Okay. Because there is, you know, a story that goes along that, in fact, I think Seth even has that story of where the followers removed his body and so on. Okay, now those followers knew that he did not rise from the dead, but his followers, his disciples, evidently went out and still spread this story of a risen Savior. Is that correct?
Yes.
All right. Now, I would like to go back then to Jesus Telus and his disciples. You said, and let's see, I was trying to remember here, you said that, let's start with Mary and Joseph, mother and stepfather of Jesus Telus. They really believed he had died on the cross also. Is that correct? Oh, no. They couldn't.
No.
No, they couldn't. That's right, because they followed their son into going to other countries after the death of this other Jesus on the cross.
Correct.
I have that right. Okay. Now, what I'm curious about is the disciples of Jesus telleth. How many of them believed that he died on the cross? How many of his original disciples believed he died on the cross?
Most of them
believed that. Were they there at the crucifixion site?
Most of them, no.
They had scattered because they were fearful. Is that correct?
Yes.
All right. So, excuse me. I supposedly had a focus, you said, of the mother of Thomas. Did Thomas believe that he died on the cross?
Yes.
All right. Did Thomas go to India as, a follower of Jesus and spreading the story in India?
No.
Oh, he did not go to India. That's interesting. Huh. They have stories, you know, that that Thomas was the person who actually brought the Christ story to India, but that is not a true story. Huh, interesting. Okay, now you mentioned that Joseph and Mary did go along with their son and stepson on his pilgrimage after this crucifixion happened, and you said that Joseph continued to spread the story, the Christ story. Is that correct?
Yes.
Was Joseph actually a part of the party when he was still spreading the Christ story?
Clarify.
I guess I'm confused that if he would have been a part of the group, of Jesus, his stepson's group, if he had been spreading this story, would people not find that curious that his stepson was still alive?
Not necessarily, for in that identities were changed.
And identity in what way? I mean, did he take on another name, or did all of them take on other names?
All of them.
All of them. They were traveling incognito, huh?
In a manner of speaking, yes.
Ah, all right. Uh-huh. And so meanwhile, going back to Jesus / Klaus, his followers, even though they were aware that their Messiah, did not actually rise from the dead, they were still able to go out and proclaim him as a risen Savior?
Yes.
Was that difficult for them to continue with that sort of story?
No. Why would it be difficult?
I assume they were spreading the same story that they had a risen Messiah.
Yes.
And the fact that he did not raise from the dead, that would be not a truth. It would be an untruth.
In some perceptions, and in your estimation, yes, but why would that be difficult to continue to express? Why would any story be difficult to maintain?
Well, I guess if you're talking about storytellers going around the countryside and embellishing on the real facts of what happened, I suppose that's what they were doing. Is that correct?
Yes.
Ah.
In relation to a cause.
In relation to a cause. And their initial cause was... can you clarify to me, what was that initial spark, that initial cause?
I would express that in this, it was the cause sparked by what you would identify as zealots. Which in actuality they were merely individuals that were very passionate about change and moving in a new direction, and in that creating a story and a cause, in a manner of speaking, to promote that change. In this, it is a matter of you remembering that it is important to consider the time and the beliefs that were expressed at that time with that culture. In that, the waiting for, the looking for a Messiah was very much a part of the philosophy and the culture in that time framework. The culture was very much expressing that that was almost a certain expectation of that occurring in that time framework. Therefore, Adam, when you are aware of that and you observe the actions and the stories that were being promoted by this group of individuals, the intention was for significant change. The subject of the stories, the subject of a Messiah, was already provided.
Yes.
They merely incorporated that story and, in a manner of speaking, capitalized on that. It was already a subject that was a tremendous part of the culture and a tremendous expectation of the culture for that time framework. They were not expecting that the Messiah would appear hundreds or thousands of years in the future. They were expecting it to occur then.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, the timing was ripe for these stories to be expressed.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, I can understand that.
And in that, the timing was so ripe for these stories to be expressed that they were tremendously successful in generating a tremendous and dramatic change, which became rooted and then grew tremendously.
Yeah, it sure did.
Therefore, they planted a seed in relation to what was already being expressed and an expectation that was already generated. And from that seed, they generated such a dramatic change that seed grew to a tremendously mighty oak.
Yes, it did.
And remains to this present day.
Yeah, that sure does. Well, I have my two close friends, Susan and Sandra, who would like to maybe help and participate maybe restating the Beatitudes or the Sermon on the Mount in the future here, and working with you on what the new words would be for the shift, you know. And so I will be doing that in the future here and coming back to you with those thoughts that we'll have put together.
Well.
Yeah, well, thank you. This was a good explanation, and I think this kind of sums up my confusion over these two Jesus persons and what was happening in their private lives, you know, and why their disciples could proceed even when they, of course, of the Jesus Klaus disciples who knew that he did not actually raise from the dead, you know, that to me always was a confusion. I thought, how can anybody continue with that that story when they knew otherwise? But it's like you say, storytellers will be storytellers, and the stories do change over time. Uh-huh.
And the story gains power dependent upon its following and dependent upon the passion that drives it and the significance of it. In this, a simple story can gain tremendous power if it is being responded to in reinforcement. And if it is accepted, and in that, in actuality, contrary to what you were thinking, it is not difficult at all to continue that type of story when it is being reinforced and it is being accepted in the volume that it was, and reinforced, and when it is being encouraged by so much excitement and acceptance.
Yeah. Well, there were definite, even though it was driven by the zealots, of course, I don't know, the zealots, I guess, had positive aspects, too, behind them. I always thought of a zealot as somebody who's ready to go to war.
Not necessarily, not in traditional terms, so to speak. They were willing to go to war, but in a different capacity. They were definitely very focused upon expressing and implementing tremendous changes, and in that sense, they were willing to go to war, but not in a traditional sense, in a philosophical sense.
Okay, yeah, that's a good way to think of it. Well, I know that they certainly inserted many compassionate philosophies in their rather violent world at that time. And I think people were very happy to grab hold of those sorts of philosophies.
I would agree. Yeah. Not so much dissimilar to now.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. Yeah. Well, thank you. That's excellent, excellent. Let's see here. Oh, I wanted to ask you about Ramtha and Chris of Chris Chronicles. They are the two entities that are from a different dimension, speaking through entities of this dimension. And I'm trying to figure out now, do they realize that they're speaking to another dimension?
Yes.
They are aware of that.
Yes.
It seems so, I don't know, impractical of them to try to teach, what should I say, methods and of I don't know, teach us things from another dimension. They
but they're not.
They're not? I'm thinking of Chris. He talked to us about having a kind of an encapsulation around our bodies, that we have nodi, N-O-D-I, all interconnected that are around our body. And I asked you if that would be something relevant for me to visualize in my mind about my energy surrounding my body, and you said not exactly. So I assume that that's because he's describing a form of energy in this other dimension.
No.
Okay.
He's using a different word, but it matters not. And the reason that I expressed that to you is that in your present direction and in your present movement, it would not necessarily be an action that would be tremendously beneficial to you. It might be curious to you to engage that action once or twice, but in not interpreting a particular direction in which it would be valuable to you to visualize your energy field, it does not necessarily benefit you to engage that type of exercise. Not that it does not exist. It does, but what would you do with it? What would your idea be of what you would do if you were seeing your energy field?
Oh, well, of course, Chris himself had us going through a visualization of attaching these nodi when they became disattached.
Now, that, once again, would be merely different words or different terminology for being interconnected or not. You are always interconnected, but you do have moments or time frameworks, not all of you, but many of you, in which you can break that interconnectedness, you can break your connection by expressing aggression.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know we've had some good discussions on that topic.
Therefore, it is merely the interpretation of different terminology, different words, but it interprets the same meaning. Very similar to what I was expressing to you about rereading the Beatitudes. and incorporating that terminology and then using that as an exercise to translate that into your present terminology. In this, there are many essences that are offering information, especially in this time framework and in relation to this shifting consciousness. And many of them may incorporate different terminology, therefore they use different words.
Mm-hmm.
Concepts are the same.
Okay. All right, I will let that rest in peace here with Grandpa and Chris. I guess when I realized that they were from different dimensions, I thought, well, what kind of nerve do they have coming to talk to us in this dimension?
Now, understand also, you are speaking of essences, and therefore you also participate in other dimensions as essence, and in that, it does not diminish your interest in your participation in this dimension and what is occurring in relation to this shift in consciousness that is occurring. Therefore, Adam, the factor that they may be, in a manner of speaking, identifying with particular focuses that are participating or have participated in other dimensions does not mean that they do not incorporate an interest in this dimension and hold an awareness of this dimension and its function and its blueprints and have information to share in relation to the functioning of this dimension and what you are doing and how you are proceeding.
Well, yeah, that's so. I shouldn't be so snobbish here, huh? And I should realize that I'm reaching out into all these other dimensions myself. You're reminding me of that. Yeah.
You are interdimensional, and they are also.
Yeah. Well, why else do I find it all interesting, huh? Yeah. Yeah, very good, very good. Well, I needed to be reminded of that, because sometimes I think, well, gee whiz, why are they sticking their nose in this dimension when they're talking about their other dimensions, you know? I wanted to ask you, quick question, what's happening with this Zika virus that's affecting so many of these newborns that are born with these small brains? It's like an epidemic now. Why?
I would express that there are many factors, not one expression or only one factor that contributes to that. It is...
One second here while I flip my tapes here, and I want to get your explanation for this, because I'm very concerned that such a tragic and sad thing. How they appear now and how their lives must be in the future. Yes, go right ahead now.
I would express that one of the factors involved is to, in a manner of speaking, raise awareness. I would express that partially it is a factor of raising awareness in relation to your environment and your directions and how interconnected everything is, and therefore how these factors are or can be affecting of your manifestations, your lives, in a manner of speaking, in general, that everything in your reality is interconnected, and everything is affecting of everything. And in that, it is partially an expression of emphasizing that this is an important point, especially now, to be aware of, and not only to be aware of, but to be actively engaging. That you are choosing with that awareness that everything is affecting of everything. Everything you do, every choice you engage is affecting of everything else, for everything is interconnected. And what seems to be isolated in physical terms to locations that are very far removed from you are not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It really is a matter of everything is interconnected and affecting of everything else. It is an enormous circle. And when that circle is not paid attention to, when it is not considered, and when awareness is not expanded, there are effects that occur that you may not be comfortable with. You are not comfortable with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And in this, I would express that this is one of the reasons for this manifestation.
Boy, it's very dramatic and very sad. Oh, yeah.
Or perhaps it may be motivating.
It would motivate us to do what?
To be more aware of what you are doing and the choices that you engage and how affecting those choices are in your daily routines and activities, and how those choices are affecting of everything and throughout your world. What you do in your daily routines, in your daily life, is not only affecting of you and your own individual environment or the individuals around you. It is affecting throughout your world.
Yes.
And that is an important point and factor to pay attention to. For I would express that if you genuinely are paying attention and are aware and expanding your awareness, and you are actually considering that everything you do is affecting of everything in your world, you may be choosing somewhat differently.
I'm trying to use this particular example to backtrack to my actions and how I would be affecting that activity.
Let me express a very simple hypothetical example.
Okay.
Let me express to you that an example of in your individual mundane routine actions in your daily life, how many times in a day do you write a list or use a piece of paper?
A lot of times. Many times.
That is an action that you would not even think about. And you do not think that writing a list on a piece of paper to visit your grocery store has any impact on any individual or anything in your world. And you do not view it as an action that is good or bad or right or wrong. You do not generate those types of judgments about that action. It is neutral. It is merely an action that you do that is helpful to you to remember something.
Uh-huh.
Now, that small, insignificant seeming action of incorporating, let us even say, merely several pieces of paper, even small pieces of paper.
Yeah.
A day.
Uh-huh.
And how many of those pieces of paper would be accumulated in the time framework of a month?
Quite a bit.
What is the implication of all of those pieces of paper that you are using within that time framework? And every one of those pieces of paper that you are writing on either incorporates markings with a substance of lead or ink.
That's right.
Now, you have combined using lead and ink and paper, and do you at any point incorporate a thought about all of the people that are involved with the manufacturing of that paper and ink and lead that you are using, and what are the resources that they are acquiring that lead and ink and paper from, and what is occurring from them using those resources, and what is that paper, lead, and ink contributing to when you are finished with it? That is one very small, what you would think of as insignificant, that you do not even think about action that you would do in your daily activities that is affecting of thousands of other individuals throughout your world, not merely in your one small community, but throughout your world, in other countries.
Yes, I understand.
And that you now possess technology in which that ink, lead, and paper is not necessary.
Well, that's so, with our computers, things like that. Mm-hmm.
Correct.
Yeah.
Our phones.
Oh, or for phones, yeah, with our phones.
Therefore, in that, you continue to engage a practice that is very familiar to you.
Yeah.
That is incorporating an effect that is interconnected, that involves people, places, environment. It involves many, 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 many factors that you never think about.
That
is only one example.
Yeah.
And you do activities such as this every day, repeatedly, in many different capacities. Now, if you were actually thinking about and being aware of the choices that you were engaging as being affecting in those terms, it is likely that your choices would be different, but you do not consider in that manner.
Well, I guess I do, to a certain degree, and then I still am wasteful. However, I, of course, pat myself on the back for doing some recycling, and
yes.
try to, make excuses for myself in that regard. But I do know I use a lot of paper and a lot of ink, a lot of disposables.
This is not an example to chide you or to encourage you to discount yourself. Not at all. It is merely an example to encourage you in the direction of recognizing that your affectingness is far more reaching than you generally will assume, and that everything is interconnected. And therefore, when you express in relation to a manifestation such as this that you identified and you are expressing sorrow in relation to that, and that it seems to be an extreme in relation to making a statement in a manner of speaking, I would express to you, it is no more extreme than your friend generating panic attacks in relation to unaddressed to energy.
Oh. Interesting. Oh, well. Talk about going full circle here, huh?
Correct.
Yeah, interesting. I'll give that some more thought, and I thank you for that.
Very welcome.
Yeah, that's been disturbing me. Well, I will draw this to a close with many, many thanks to you again, Elias, for being here for me.
Very welcome, my dear friend.
And I just wanted to ask you if you're aware that I'm calling on you every day, you and others.
As always, yes.
Oh, good, good. Okay, thank you for being here for me.
You are very welcome. I shall be anticipating our next meeting, and I shall greatly be anticipating our conversation when we engage your Beatitudes.
Okay, we'll be working on that. Thank you. All right, bye-bye for now.
Wondrous lovingness to you, my dear friend, as always. Au revoir.
Bye-bye.